Welcome back. Today's episode is all about childhood mysteries, the strange, confusing, or creepy things we experienced as kids that made no sense at the time, but finally got explained years later. If you've ever had a wait, that's what really happened? Moment, hit that like button and subscribe. I remember being about 8 and in the car with my dad. I was in the front seat, and we were driving somewhere, and this song came on the radio. He cranked it and said something about it being the best guitar playing ever. He really jammed out, which was really uncharacteristic because he was usually so stoic. It was the only time I heard the song, and he died before I could ever ask him what song it was. When I asked around, no one knew WTF I was talking about or what song I was thinking of. So I had this melody in my head for years, but how do you look up a song that has no lyrics? So for years and years, this song stayed on the back burner in my brain. I was afraid to forget it. Somehow this story pops up when I'm, like, 26 or so, chatting with my husband, and we search YouTube for best guitar songs. After about 15 minutes, we find it. Cliffs of Dover was the song that I'd burned into my brain on repeat for 16 years. Now I jam out to it with my kids. I solved a family mystery for my mom. I wasn't allowed to play console video games during the week all the way until I was 18, but some nights I'd really be craving it, so I would noiselessly creep through my house into my basement, where I could play video games in peace. But once every 30 times or so one of my parents would need something from the basement, and I'd quickly turn off the TV monitor, hide in the guest room, and pray they didn't turn on a light or notice the Xbox was on. One night I ducked into the guest room and hid behind the bed. To my horror, my mom followed me into the room and turned on the lights. I was panicking, so when she started digging through the closet with her back to me, I made a run for it. I nearly brushed her shirt, and if she'd seen me, I'd probably have given her a heart attack. But I made it and kept going all the way to bed. About 5 years went by, and my mom said something like, "You're such a quiet walker," and I told her it was because of my basement trips, thinking I had nothing to lose. My mom's face went kind of solemn, and when I explained, she said, "So there really was someone down there." And she explained that she remembered that exact night and the feeling that there was a ghost in the room. Over the next couple of days she'd stare into space and just say, "I can't believe you were really there." She seemed to get over it, but she probably checks empty rooms more closely now. We grew up poor, and at the age of 10, my friends were all having these crazy birthday parties with petting zoos, bounce houses, clowns, etc., so my mother, who is very resourceful, decided I would have a sleepover for my 11th birthday. It was great, and we were going to make ice cream cones. So we got all the stuff out with my mom, and my mother opened up the box of cones, and they were all smashed up. She said that we weren't having regular ice cream, we were having magic castle sundaes, because the broken ice cream cones resembled the sections of a castle. We all thought this was great, and we had them. When my friends went home, they asked their parents to make magic castle sundaes. 2 days ago I found out that my mother was getting the pass sell by foods behind the grocery store. They were not expired, just past the sell by date. She had no idea that the cones were brown up until she opened them with us. She thought of the magic castle idea quickly, and we all loved it. Just goes to show how stupid kids are, lol. As a kid, I played Medal of Honor, Allied Assault with my brother. We got to the fifth level, which took place in a rainy French city similar to Saving Private Ryan. However, we always got stuck on the first objective, which was to locate the bazooka team. There were no clues as to where this team was in a giant rubble-filled city with poor visibility. To make things worse, hidden enemy snipers would constantly fire at you, making the search much more difficult than it already was. My brother and I practically scoured every nook and cranny, but we never found this team. If the bazooka team was trying to stay hidden, they were doing a good job. In the months that followed, we reinstalled and replayed the game several times but would always get stuck on that level. Fast forward several years, and I got the digital version of Allied Assault for nostalgia's sake. I dreaded playing the fifth level, but to my surprise, I easily cleared the first objective by happening across the corpses of the bazooka team in one of the buildings. Turns out the CD we originally played on was bugged, where the bodies never even rendered into the game. All we did was waste several hours looking for a group of people that never made it to the battle in the first place. Giddy at the prospect of finally completing the game, I happily continued the level only to quit when I kept getting sniped by those damn hidden snipers. One evening when camping, my brother caught a fish that we decided to keep alive in the cooler for some reason. Well, the next morning we ran out to see the fish, and it had grown like 5 inches. We were so excited and didn't know how the fish grew that much overnight. Last year we brought it up, and my dad said that he had gotten up that morning and seen the fish being taken by a raccoon and that he spent the next hour or so frantically fishing for another one. He said he caught the new fish, the first one he was able to catch, just a few minutes before we got up. I had never questioned the fish growing that much as I grew up, but after hearing what really happened, I did feel like we probably should have wondered about that more. When I was 4, I vividly remember getting into my mom's car and her telling me that our cat had died. She told me how she rushed him to the vet and he was shedding fur, something was seriously wrong. Despite her best efforts, he died. I never knew why he died and why it happened so suddenly, but I accepted that it happened. Fast forward about 15 years, and I'm home from college for Christmas. On Christmas Eve, I'm out driving to the store with my dad and uncle. They are talking about the cat my parents got for Christmas one year, the cat mentioned above. My dad says, "Yeah, that thing was too aggressive, so I took it to a farm and gave it away." Normally, when the family pet dies, the parents lie to the kid and say it went to a farm upstate somewhere to ease the burden. Not my parents. They told me the horrifying truth, even though it wasn't, you know, true. My uncle, single/no kids, lived a few houses away from my grandparents, so my siblings and I would go between the houses and always loved my uncle's house because he had a huge fish tank of tropical fish and let us play video games. He was the most fun uncle there was, always taking us to the movies, amusement parks, fishing, and golfing, and he was so fun to be around, always having us rolling with laughter. But over time he became less okay with us popping over, and we resorted to sneaking into his house. We didn't get far along, and he was pissed. From that point on we always just saw him in my grandparents' house. We used to joke with him about having a girlfriend over. Fast forward 17 years later, he had a massive heart attack, and while he was in the hospital, his sisters went into his house to look for paperwork and get the house ready for his return. There they found rooms full of empty bottles of cheap vodka. My uncle had severe alcoholism for years, and none of us knew it. And suddenly so many little things started making sense. He ended up dying shortly thereafter of organ failure brought on by alcoholism. He wasn't even 60 yet. When I was little, I used to have this experience where all of a sudden my perception of size and distance would get all wonky. I would look at everything around me, and it would all look small and far away. And I always felt like a giant, yet when I looked at my hands, they'd be so small. This only ever happened at night. I would usually get up, go downstairs, walk around a bit in the kitchen, and then it would fade away and I'd go back to bed. I told my mom once, "The windows are far away," and she just brushed it off. Fast forward many years later, it turns out I had what's called Alice in Wonderland syndrome. Kids get it sometimes and then stop getting it at like 10 to 12 years old. It's apparently harmless. I had meningitis when I was 2 years old, and my baby brother had it also when he died. I had the viral form, he had the bacterial form. I grew up thinking I had it first and always felt like I gave it to him and was the reason he died. I know, but you can't help what you think, especially when you're a kid. It wasn't until I was an adult that I learned that he actually had it before me. I don't know why no one had ever told me that before, except maybe they didn't because they weren't aware that I always harbored this guilt about it since I kept everything inside. Not one person had ever mentioned to me that he had died before I got it, or maybe I was in the hospital when he died. That part still isn't clear to me. I was in the hospital for about 3 weeks, so it could have been before or during my hospital stay. I wasn't a kid anymore, but some years back when my mom was terminally ill, my family was receiving food-based gifts from a lot of our friends. Prepped dinners, baked snacks, a restaurant gift card or two, and the usual support friends extend when people they care about are going through tough times. For a long time I remember Dad asking me if I'd tried any pastries we'd gotten from some family friends, we'll call them the Nelsons. I let him know they were a little dry but very tasty, and he chuckled. It stuck with me because it was an odd question and reaction. It wasn't until a couple of years later, spacing out driving home, that I remembered Dad's bizarre reaction and the fact that the Nelsons had suggested easing some of Mom's pain with marijuana, which they grew at home around the same period. I had eaten pot cookies. I feel like an idiot for not realizing it, and I don't remember anything that happened after I ate the pastries. How Santa Claus made the pepernoten fall through the ceiling. I quickly discovered Santa wasn't real when I was a kid, but I was certain that the Dutch version, Sinterklaas, was real because in December, pepernoten, tiny Dutch cookies, would suddenly rain down on me, and I thought Sinterklaas was on the roof dropping it through the ceiling. I was so convinced about this that I bragged to the kids in my class that my Santa was real and theirs was fake, but the Dutch Santa only visits Dutch kids in America. Apparently my mom would carry handfuls of pepernoten in her pockets, and when I wasn't expecting it, she would throw them up in the air above me. I don't know how I didn't realize what was going on at the time. The first year I was in on the secret, and I watched my mom throw pepper-notin at my brother, it seemed so obvious. When we were kids, we'd ride our bikes up the road to this horse ranch that sat up on a hill. So many memories on that hill. Anyways, in the distance was a huge hill that was eventually bought and turned into a winery. This hill was covered in trees minus the bare area that faced toward us. Well, on one autumn afternoon, my best buddy and I spotted something very furry walking on 2 feet from one tree to another. This hill is likely hundreds of yards away from us. And whatever we saw was clearly bigger than us. Since the sun was setting, it obviously scared the shit out of us, and we screamed down the road on our dirt bikes away from whatever that thing was. It turns out many years later that I discovered what my buddy and I saw was likely a bear walking on 2 feet. For nearly a decade, my buddy and I would have sworn we saw a Bigfoot. For over 20 years, I had a very distinct memory of seeing this movie with my dad around the holidays in our living room. It was a black and white movie, but I had a vivid memory of only this one specific scene. I was probably about 6 or 7 when I watched it with him. It bugged me for the longest time. I would think about it periodically for years because I remembered it being so cool. I just wanted to know what movie it was so I could check it out as an adult. Then one day, I can't even remember where, but someone online somewhere had described this movie and mentioned the name, and it sounded really similar to the one I remembered. I looked it up on YouTube, and it turns out the movie was Babes in Toy Land / March of the Wooden Soldiers. The scene I remembered so vividly was all of the soldiers marching out of the toy shop. Figuring this out was literally one of the most satisfying things I've ever felt in my life. I had nightmares for years. Literally every dream I had was where my older sister was a robot and trying to kill me. She would come in the form of a tank, things that looked like Transformers, or a metallic spider and had a lot of knives and shit on her. Every single metallic robot you can imagine with my sister's face on it. Had only these dreams for all of elementary school. It was solved when I brought it up at 17. I was born super early, 4 months. I was born with so many issues and complications. After I was born, I spent 5 months in the NICU, where I received a lot of attention from doctors, had multiple surgeries, and had a feeding tube put in me. My mom was sad that I couldn't meet my sister and she couldn't meet me, she was 4 at the time. So she put a picture of my sister's face above me in my incubator thing so I could see my sister. Cute idea, but this ended up causing my brain to put together the only two things I knew. Surgical tools and scary hospital equipment with my sister's face. It took us so long to figure out what the hell these nightmares meant. When I was 12 or 13, I had a horrifying experience one night. I woke up, completely awake, not dreaming, and felt like I was encased in transparent concrete. I could only move my eyes, and even though I was breathing, I couldn't control it. Everything was bizarre, and I could sense a malevolent presence in the corner of my room, but I couldn't turn to look at it. This went on for what felt like hours. I was drenched in sweat and felt like I was suffocating because my adrenaline had kicked in big time, but I couldn't increase my respiration. Finally, after trying to scream 1,000 times, I was finally able to get a squeak out. I kept going and going until I was screaming at the top of my lungs, but my family didn't come check on me. After another 1,000 tries, I was able to start barely moving. I finally broke out of the encasement and was able to move and realized what I thought was my screaming was a barely audible whisper. I didn't wake my family because I had nothing to tell them that wouldn't be dismissed as a bad dream. I didn't go back to sleep that night, and I had horrific insomnia for decades, until in my 40s I saw a documentary about people who said they'd been abducted by UFOs. It was a dry, fact-based documentary, and they had experts on explaining that many such abductees were actually experiencing something called sleep paralysis. My jaw hung open. I called my wife in, as I had told her about my supernatural experience, and we listened as these scientists described my experience exactly. Here, after decades, was the clinical description that, literally, changed my life. My sleep began returning to normal, and my mental health improved. When I was a child, I believed in Santa Claus. As I grew up through elementary school, I became more skeptical of his existence. But there was one fact I couldn't get over, one fact that kept me believing longer than any kid should. How does every single adult have their story straight? Every grown-up could name the reindeer, tell you where Santa lived, how he got around, what he wore, how his toys were made, what you get for being naughty, etc. How could it possibly be a lie when everyone knows all these exact details? It would have to be a cover-up on a massive scale, possibly organized through secret meetings held by the government that only adults could attend. I toiled for years wondering exactly how they could coordinate such an elaborate lie. I finally broke when, 1 year, I asked Santa for coal and instead got charcoal, suspiciously the same kind my parents kept in the garage. I interrogated my parents, and they finally had to fess up that it was all a lie. That every fact they knew about Santa came from stories, songs, movies, and television. That there was no corporate conspiracy, only a bunch of adults that had heard far too many shopping mall winter playlists. I was brought up in Ireland, and unusual as it was, my parents never drank. Every Christmas our family friends would forget about this and give our parents alcohol as gifts. Naturally, my parents either threw the bottles of whiskey, vodka, etc. into the storeroom or re-gifted them. 1 year when I was 8 years old, my parents got this awesome bottle of 40-year-old Scottish whiskey. It was a cool-looking bottle, so they placed it with pride on the mantelpiece. I grew older and taller and was a bit of a Jack the Lad. When I was 16, my parents decided to go out of town for the weekend. My brother, who was 18, decided we should pull an Ocean's 11 on it and steal the bottle and go to a massive house party with lots of beautiful-looking ladies. I told him that we would surely get caught because this bottle of whiskey was the pride of the house. My brother, who is so cunning that if you placed a tail on him, you could call him a weasel, explained that we would drink the bottle of the finest whiskey this side of Bonnie Scotland and take the empty bottle home and fill it with cold Irish black tea. We duly did this and had an amazing time at the party. Mum and Dad came home and were none the wiser. Day turned into night, days turned into months, seasons passed, years went by, and both my brother and I were in college. We returned home one Christmas and noticed straight away that the bottle of whiskey was gone. We were like, Jesus Christ, Mum is going to murder us. However, nothing was said, and we all had a great Christmas. Again the days and nights went by, seasons came and went, and a few years added up. I was around 24 years old and was working in a hospital for a while and often had lunch with the janitors, cleaners, and handymen that worked there. After 3 months, one older Irish gentleman that I got to know very well said to me, "Older man, young man, do you like whiskey?" Me, "Of course I do." "Older man, well, let me tell you a story." "Older man, many years ago, your father asked me to paint the outside walls of your home. When your father went to pay me for my hard day of work, I refused. And knowing that they don't drink, I remarked, could I lift that 50-year-old bottle of fine Scottish whiskey? Your father thought this was an amazing deal, and I went home happy. My wife made me a steak and poured me a large glass of whiskey, and I sat on the porch on a lovely summer's day. Then I drank the fucking cool tea and nearly had a heart attack. At this moment, I was literally in the end scene of The Usual Suspects. I couldn't believe it and didn't know what to say. Simply, I was gobsmacked. I offered to pay the older man for his work, however, he refused and laughed, saying that he was young once. I am now 45 years old, and my parents to this day don't know that we stole the bottle of whiskey, swapped it out with tea, and then a poor old man drank it years later and never got paid for his honest day's work. Only in Ireland, folks. When I was a little kid in the 80s, I was swept up by the satanic panic. I went to a Catholic school in a medium-sized city, and they really took it seriously. Everyone did. I was convinced that the entire world was secretly controlled by a cabal of devil-worshipping sex fiends, and I was determined to grow up and do everything I could to stop them. Then sometime in high school the whole thing just went away. One day the satanic Illuminati was out to molest every little kid they could find and then next day they were gone. Eventually I forgot all about the whole thing. Flash forward to my mid-20s. I was in college and sitting in my apartment getting high when all of a sudden I remembered the whole satanic panic. I remember thinking, whatever happened with that? Were they all caught? Did I dream that? Luckily the internet was in its extreme infancy, but since my roommate was a longtime computer geek, we had it in my apartment. So I went online and looked it up. I'll admit that I felt mixed emotions when I found out that 99.99% of it was total bullshit. I was both relieved and angry. Relieved for obvious reasons but angry because it generated a lot of fear in me when I was little. Little kids shouldn't be hearing stories of ritual sex abuse and violent sacrifices. For fuck's sake, my school had a lecturer who was a priest who was supposed to be an expert on Satanism, and he showed us a movie where some people killed and ate an actual cat. I was junior high age. We were told it was 100% real, and while now as an adult I'm skeptical it was, it still looked real. Especially to a 12-year-old. Anyway, the whole thing was fucked up, but I'm glad I got closure. And now it's one of those things that people are now comfortable talking about, and being an adult, I find the whole thing very fascinating. Everything from how it started to how it ended and everything in between is a pretty wild ride. The mystery of Zeus. When I was very young, I very distinctly remember having a friend named Zeus. How could you forget someone with that amazing of a name? At some point, probably around third grade, he moved away and disappeared. I could never even find him in the yearbooks. It's like he never existed. My mother, the family, and everyone kept telling me that I was imagining this kid. One day I'm telling my wife about my old best friend Zeus, the kid who vanished off the face of the earth and took every person's memory of him with him. I even showed her where he used to live when we drove by it, recounting the day I went to his birthday party and he had a great piñata. My wife stared at me for a moment and, very slowly, asked, "Honey, did people yell for him a lot? Like, 'Hey Zeus, come here?'" "Well, of course they did. How else would they get his attention? Hey Zeus, what's up? Hey, Zeus, how are you? Duh. That's a silly question. And he had a piñata? Yeah, why? Sweetie, I bet you his name was Jesus. Hey Zeus. Zeus." It was like being hit with a truck of realization. I asked my mother later, and, yes, I did pal around with a kid named Jesus. It was one of the greatest mysteries of my life, one that made me question whether or not it was an imaginary friend, and it turned out to just be me being a dumb as a rock kid. There was a kid show we had, like, two VHS tapes of when I was a kid. I believe each tape had only two episodes, but it may have been three or four, lol. It's been a long time. As far as I know, this series never aired on any TV channel. This show had a grandma puppet telling a story to start the episode, then it'd go to this dream world made of quilted blankets, inhabited by cute puppet animals. A human child puppet would visit this world and help the animal puppets resolve their problem. The point of the show was to teach various lessons in a way young kids could understand. Every year or so since I was a kid, I had searched for this show with no results, besides frustration. I had last watched it in, like, 1996 or 1997? The point is, I didn't know the name of it. Every search and variation of the search resulted in much newer shows. Turns out finding pre-internet stuff can be difficult. But the entire series is on YouTube now, and I was able to find it by searching a single episode name that I happened to remember from about 3 years ago, Haste Makes Waste. For anyone curious, it's called The Land of Pleasant Dreams. If you have kids, put it on for them, they might like it. I used to have horrible reoccurring nightmares from about age 6 to 19. I'm a 27-year-old male now, wherein everything around me was moving rapidly and I was standing still. Think of the movie Limitless when the main character traveled places. The movie terrified me because of this. I would wake up in a cold sweat, scared to death. When I was 19, a girl I liked convinced me to smoke weed for the first time, and lo and behold, being high caused the same thing that had been happening in my dreams for years to happen in real life. It was an epiphany moment for me. I realized that I had these awful dreams for so long because my mom would smoke weed around me when I was growing up, and I'd get a wicked contact high and not understand what was happening to me, and it translated to my dreams. Boom, mystery solved. Thanks, Mom. Literally from that day on I never had that dream again, and the Limitless movie doesn't scare me anymore. My mom doesn't know she caused me that sort of trauma growing up. I can't imagine she would take it seriously anyways. I've smoked maybe 30 times after that over the course of the last 8 years. It's not for me. I had a golden retriever growing up who loved chew toys. One year, we got him one of those big, meaty cow bones as a birthday present and put him in the backyard to go ham on it. He had it for a single afternoon, and then it vanished. This thing was over a foot long. We checked all over the backyard. I had a fairly large backyard with ivy, cattails, and some other shrubbery around the perimeter, and could not find a trace of it, not even some overturned dirt where he might have buried it. We eventually concluded that a coyote must have come into the yard at night and taken it, even though our fence was quite tall. 10 years later, the dog has passed away, the whole family has moved halfway across the state, and my parents are renting out the house. They drove down one weekend to do some maintenance for the tenants and found the bone sitting smack in the middle of the backyard steps, meatless and somewhat bleached out, but completely intact. My dad casually brings it up, and the tenants tell him their little dog found it under the back porch. All those years we thought the dog just liked chilling under the porch, and he was actually working on that damn bone. Not necessarily a childhood mystery, but it's close enough. Backstory, I'm from England, and where I live is completely flat, East Coast. Literally no hills, let alone mountains, were in my area. I visited Vancouver when I was 18 and kept seeing these spotlights in the night sky. Like, a bunch of bright lights all clustered together. The only explanation I could come up with was that they were some sort of alien creation or that I was just straight tripping. I was too embarrassed to tell anyone or even ask, so I just moved on, putting it down to possible jet lag, etc. Fast forward to me being 23 and realizing that I was looking at ski lights on the mountain that was nearby. I remember the exact moment it dawned on me. I just laughed at my stupidity. I still can't believe I went 5 years thinking I'd witnessed some extraterrestrial event and was fully prepared to take it to the grave. When I was in elementary school, we were learning about different cultures and the folklore associated with them. I have a decent amount of Irish in my blood, so naturally I perked up when they started talking about Ireland and, more specifically, leprechauns. Our teacher told us this tale about leprechauns and how much they loved flower petals, and if they were ever caught, they would give you a gift in exchange for their freedom. So naturally I started hatching a plan. Once I got home, I told my mom all about what I had learned and how I was going to catch a leprechaun and get a gift. I picked some flower petals from my mom's garden, grabbed a plastic cup, a length of string, and a stick, and set up in the backyard. I had my trap in place, laid down on the grass, and watched intently for a leprechaun to wander by, drawn to the smell of the freshly picked petals. About an hour passed, and I started to doze off. I don't know how long I had been asleep, but when I awoke, the cup was tipped over and my trap had been sprung. I couldn't believe how lucky I was. I was so excited and put my ear up to the cup to hear if anything was squirming around inside. It was silent. As I lifted up the cup, my heart sank because, of course, there was no leprechaun underneath. But hidden in the grass under the cup was a small green boot. I was so excited because I thought, well, I didn't catch a full leprechaun, but of course he will want his boot back. So I ran inside and told my mom the whole story. She convinced me to write the little guy a note and to give him his boot back, and perhaps he'd give me a gift in return. So I pulled out some loose leaf and a pen and wrote the shoeless leprechaun a note. I told him that in exchange for his boot I would want a gift in return. I placed the boot on top of the note and left it on the kitchen table. I also made sure to leave the back door open a smidge before bed. In the morning I rushed downstairs to see if my plan had worked. On the kitchen table the boot was nowhere to be seen, but in its place was this Power Rangers action figure that I had bugged my parents for a week or so prior. I was so excited and happy and brought it in for show and tell and bragged to everyone at school about how I had cut a deal with a leprechaun in exchange for my new favorite toy. But life went on, and years passed, and my belief in magic faded along with the memory. Years later, when I was in college, we moved out of my childhood home, and during the move, we all took the time to go through a bunch of our old things. I was helping my mom with one of her memory/keepsake boxes, and she was telling me about the different items and what memories were attached to them. At the bottom of the box was a little green piece of felt that was cut and sewn into the shape of a boot. The memory of that day came rushing back to me as I finally realized the effort my mom had gone through to make a little boy believe in magic. It is my favorite childhood memory now and one of the most impactful moments in my life. I still get teary-eyed thinking about it and hope to do little things like that for my kids because little things like that really do make a difference. Love you, Mom. When I was 2 or 3, I put together that right before bedtime, I was sent to the bathroom to pee. Well, me being a stubborn little shit just decided if I didn't go to the bathroom, I wouldn't have to go to bed. Only I had to go to bed anyway and ended up wetting the bed. After this happened 3 or maybe 4 times, my sister came up with an amazing idea. She is 11 years older than me and is my idol. I would have done anything for her because I adored her. So right before bedtime one night, she told me that she really, really, really had to pee, but she was so busy with homework. Could I go pee for her so she could get her homework done? And of course my toddler ass was an idiot and did it. The kicker is I was driving along going to a babysitting job when I was 17 years old, and out of the blue it hit me that you literally cannot pee for someone. I felt so stupid. To this day I get a little pissed off when I think about it and a little awestruck that my sister came up with. Well, it was a short-lived mystery for me, but it kind of counts. I was born in Alabama and moved north to Indiana when I was 4. We had 2 dogs that moved with us, and my dog was Hannah, the collie. She didn't handle the move very well, and I remember her always running away and chewing on doors to get outside, stuff like that. Well, one day my mother told me that Hannah had gone to live on a farm in Alabama and that she'd be much happier there. I automatically believed her because we lived in the boonies down in Alabama and all our neighbors had farmland. It wasn't until I was much older, like 20 plus years, that a friend pointed out to me that what my mom told me sounds like the classic lie you tell a kid when their pet dies. Well, I asked my mom about it again, and she reassured me that Hannah had, in fact, gone to live with an old neighbor of ours in Alabama that had enough land for her to run like she loved and even proved it with pictures. It was nice to know she hadn't actually died way back then, but for a few days I felt like an idiot for never questioning that Hannah went to live on a farm. Turns out I was smart to believe my mama. Some backstory, I'm from Northern Ireland, and my parents split up when I was 1 year old in a very angry and messy way. So, when I was 3 years old, my mom decided to take us to Glasgow in Scotland for Christmas. We have family there, and mom thought it would be a nice change and would give us a nice, wholesome Christmas experience. One day we went shopping with my aunt in a large shopping center in Glasgow, and I distinctly remember something strange happening. I saw a man with the exact same brightly colored coat that my dad had at the time. He had similar colored hair too. I remember trying to run out of my mother's arms, and I was screaming, "Daddy, Daddy," but obviously the guy didn't look at me. There was a woman with him too. My mom kept saying to me, "That's not him, Funk Punk, he just has a similar coat." Years later I said to my mom, "Remember that time I thought I saw Dad in Glasgow?" And she instantly said, "Oh my goodness, that was the worst day ever. It was him." Of all the places in the world, we happened to be in the same shop in a different country at the same time. I have a good relationship with my dad now, but hearing the truth about that day fucked me up. I used to think of it as a funny story before I knew the truth. When I was 7, my mom and her friend organized meeting the Nicholas, St. Nicholas, on December 6th for me and the friend's child. Usually you would meet him in school or somewhere public, but this happened in the friend's living room and was just for us too. He entered and immediately started calling us by our names and talked about our latest accomplishments in school. I was mortified. It felt like the stuff nightmares were made out of. There was a gigantic man with a deep voice addressing me, and he was like a stalker. Stranger danger never felt so real. We never repeated meeting the Nicholas, and for years I felt shivers down my spine when thinking of meeting this creep. I was maybe around 25 when I remembered this tragic day and asked my mom who this nightmare in flesh and blood used to be. She was shocked that I never figured out that it was a good friend of hers who would visit our home at least once a week over many, many years. He would often talk to me about my life in school, and he knew me since I was a toddler. That explained why he knew so many little details about me, and it only took me a decade and a half to solve. When I was about 3 years old, my parents and I lived in a nice two-story house in the foothills. I was up in the office watching cartoons or something, and the phone rang. Apparently I was a little kid that loved talking on the phone. I would even babble nonsense into an old phone and copy my dad. I picked it up, and a man on the other end knew my name and asked if I liked candy canes. He said his name was Alan, and he was at my door with candy canes for me. So of course, I toddled downstairs and tried to open the door. Now this is how it played out in my little baby brain. There was a knock at the door, but before I could get there, my dad opened the door, and my mom stood behind him. He had a sword, which was probably just the knife he'd carried for years, and scared Alan away. They told me he wanted to abduct me and didn't actually have any candy canes. For 10 years I thought that I had barely escaped being abducted, and it was just something that never got talked about. Turns out, it was a lesson my parents wanted to teach me about not opening the door for strangers. My dad made the call with a phony voice, knocked on the door, and ran back inside through the garage before I could get there. About a year or two later, he said that when he took me to meet a friend of his named Alan, I did not like him at all, and he could never figure out why until I brought it up. When I was a kid, I couldn't read very well, and I had trouble actually putting letters in the order they were supposed to be in. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm dyslexic, but I've never gotten tested. I'm in my 20s now and just never found the time. I always remember on long car rides, whenever we drove over a bridge, there were signs that said stuff like "look out for icebergs" or just "icebergs." I knew what icebergs were but was always super confused because we're in a landlocked state, and I didn't think we had icebergs here. Turns out, the signs said "look out for ice on bridge" or "ice in bridge." I still read it as icebergs, though. Also, mini story, my dad would find tiny rocks that looked like teeth and called them Indian teeth. I didn't know they were actually rocks until, like, 2 years ago. I was amazed at how he always found teeth. I got sick a few weeks back, and he brought me some stuff to make me feel better. At the bottom of the box there was an envelope with tiny rocks in it, and it had Indian teeth crossed out, and he put Indigenous People of America teeth. We've been talking about political stuff, and he's trying his best to learn. It warms my heart. But yeah, watch out for icebergs and look for teeth next time you're outside. When I was around 10 or so, my family moved to a house out in the country. It sat back about a half mile from the road, and in the front by the road was an old graveyard. Old, at least in Midwestern US standards, most gravestones were from the 1800s to early 1900s. The year that we moved there, my parents wanted to start several gardens, and one of them was up near the fence line by the graveyard to block the view from the road. I was helping my dad plant things, and I found a row of horse teeth, which I thought was weird, but my dad told me that sometimes people buried their horses like we do the dogs and cats we had that passed, and I thought nothing of it, and we buried it back where we found it. Dad never ended up doing much with that garden, but I never worried about it. When I was in college and had long since forgotten about it, one of my friends, who was my father's teacher's assistant at the time, he taught at the college I went to, asked me about the time I dug up part of a skull. Oh yeah, the horse teeth? Oh no, that wasn't from a horse. As a child, I always wondered why my dad never visited me, returned my calls, wished me a happy birthday, wished me a happy holiday, or attempted to say anything to me. It was because he wanted nothing to do with me. No matter how hard I tried reaching out to him, I never heard from him. I even called him on Father's Day to wish him a good day before he ever said happy birthday or I love you. On Christmas, my mom had her friend Greg call me to pretend to be Santa since she said my GameCube was from him. She didn't tell me who it was, all she told me was someone wanted to talk to me. I immediately thought it was my dad, and I thanked him for my GameCube. I told him that I loved him and hoped we could talk soon. Once the call was over, my mom went in my grandmother's room and sobbed. It broke her heart, and I couldn't imagine how Greg felt. It took me a long time to finally realize that my dad didn't want to see me, didn't want to call me, or anything really. I realized that my dad was married to another woman with another child. He was a year younger than me. He took care of him but not once reached out to me. It was the most bitter pill I ever had to swallow. I had to accept that my father wanted nothing to do with me and probably thought of me as a mistake. I had to realize this in my teens, and it was one of the worst times of my life. Currently, I'm over the situation, and I've learned to let it go. I'll always resent and hate him for what he did to me, but I'll never let it consume me. I promised myself if I ever had a child, I'd be a better parent than he would. I have many more stories about my father if anyone is curious. But for now, that was my realization. Not so much a mystery, but I remember going to visit my dad one weekend when I was, like, 5, and my stepmom wore dark sunglasses to pick my brother and me up. When we got home, she removed them, revealing a black eye. Obviously, my brother and I asked her what happened. She tripped and hit her face on the corner of the counter. We, being kids, took her at her word. We never noticed any other bruises, ever. One night, when I was 17, I came home from a party about 5 minutes after curfew and was met by my dad, who had been drinking Jack. My stepmom always said Jack made him mean. He asked me why I was late. And I shot back that I wasn't even 5 minutes late. He stepped up on me, all 240 pounds, towering over my lanky six frame by a good 4 inches, his eyes glazed over, and I thought I was going to be beaten right then and there. Then, he hesitated, stepped back, and stuck his finger in my face and said, "When I say midnight, it doesn't mean 12:01, it means 11:59, or else. Now get the fck upstairs." Needless to say, I quickly untied my shoes and put them neatly in the mudroom closet. He always yelled at me for being lazy if I didn't untie my shoes before I took them off, and skipped every other step running to my bedroom. Once in bed, everything made sense. I lost any respect I had left for him after that night. I haven't spoken to him in a year. And before then it had been 2 years. Why my parents were so much older than the average mom and dad for a kid my age, and why I had two brothers named Chris. All my childhood, friends would ask if my parents were my grandparents and why my twin brother and my older brother were named Chris. My parents were adamant that they had us later in their life, that we looked so much like our dad when he was younger, and that they named my twin and me after our big brother because he begged them to. I shared his middle name, and my twin shared his first name. When we turned 15, my twin and I were doing homework together, and I ran out of paper. I looked in a closet and found a briefcase, which I figured had extra paper. Come to find out it had a bunch of adoption papers. My older brother and sister were adopted together, and my twin and I were adopted separately years later. Come to find out, my big brother and sister were told they were adopted and used running away to their biological parents as an ultimatum to try to get their way and ended up actually doing it at one time, which is why our adoptive parents never told us the truth. They were scared we'd do the same, I guess. Long story short, I ended up searching for my real parents eventually and finally located a biological family member's phone number when I was 21. I quickly found out that our biological parents had both overdosed and died by the time we would have been 4 years old. Pretty anticlimactic, as I had a list of questions to ask them, but I was relieved to have some closure. I am also blessed to have had such awesome parents, who, in my eyes, always will be my real parents. Unfortunately, my adoptive mom passed away recently as well. R.I.P., Mom. When I was 11, my siblings and I used to feed a scrawny stray kitten. My parents wouldn't let us bring it inside, so we made it a warm, dry bed under our porch and brought it milk. We called her Charlotte. She was some kind of Siamese. She didn't drink a lot of milk, though. Or eat much food at all. In hindsight, I can see she might have been pretty sick, but I didn't know at the time. She came and went as she pleased, but one day, she never came back. The neighborhood kids were wild with speculation. One girl said she saw a man take her away. The man was a weird, quiet neighbor with a ponytail and motorcycles. He never talked to us kids, but he wasn't mean. He mostly came out at night, and he was always cutting grass or taking his grandma places. We never did find out if it was him. When I was 24, I joined an art class. He was in it. The class met weekly, and I got to know him and everyone else in it. We all became friends, and he still lived by my parents. He wasn't as much older as I thought. When I was 29, we started dating. About 6 months in, he showed me an old picture. It was a picture of his parents' cat. He asked me if I recognized the cat, which was fat and healthy and happy. I didn't. As if it were some horrific confession, he told me it was a cat I asked him about when I was 11. Apparently, I approached him and asked him if he took our cat. I don't remember, but I remember suspecting him. He said kids freak him out and he didn't know what to say, so he lied and said no just to be done with the conversation. What really happened is he did take the kitten. On his way to work one day, he saw a dead kitten on the side of the road in the blazing summer sun. He went to work. When he got home, the kitten was still there, so he got a shovel and scooped it up to bury it. He always cleans the street in front of his house. But then he took it out of the shovel with his gardening gloves, and it breathed. He took it in and tried to revive it. He syringe fed it a little water and called a vet. The kitten survived after her hospital stay. He gave the kitten to his parents when she was healthy again, where it lived until just the previous year. He said he felt so bad for lying to me, and he thought I would break up with him. We're married now, lamau. Some kid made up a story about how if you put a pound coin under a leftover cardboard box down this magic alley, the rear of a local shop, and then came back the next day, it would become 2 pounds. Of course we all called him stupid, so he proved it to us. I grabbed a coin, shoved it angrily under a box, and we met up the next day. Bam! 2 pounds. Naturally we assumed he had just run back before we got there and added another, so ultimately we weren't too impressed, but being the top investigators that we were, we decided to plant a coin of our own and not tell him. The next day we ran back and lifted the box. 2 pounds. I mean, at this point, as an adult, I probably would have assumed it was the shopkeeper amusing himself by watching our reactions on the CCTV after planting the extra coin himself, or even if I had believed it, stuck a grand down under there for extra profit. But no. As a kid, we just kept planting a pound coin for weeks and weeks. Every now and then we'd return and find just one coin, but we put this down to having to let the magic recharge. I'd forgotten about the magic alley completely until I was about, maybe 20? Drink had made me more retarded than Donald Trump, so on the way home from the club I stopped for a good old bit of banter with an ancient homeless dude. I can't remember how it came up, but the old boy said, "Watch this." He followed him, somewhat stupidly, into a dark alleyway, where he promptly lifted a box left in the middle of the walkway and tossed in a pound coin. I nearly shit myself when I realized exactly where I was. Magic Alley. Turns out that Hobo Bob had been doing this for over 30 years. Bob told me he just loved the reactions of the children, loved the legend he had created about Magic Alley, and just loved giving. Of course, after realizing this homeless dude with barely a penny to his name had given me well over 20 quid of the time I had abused the Magic Alley, no pun intended, I tried to give him the measly fiver that was left in my wallet, to which he refused. Sadly, the man died a few years later of old age. Turns out he had a home and had a sustainable amount of money, which he hadn't touched in God knows how long, and simply chose to live the life he lived as a magical money-generating bum. I mean, in hindsight there's a good chance he was a bit of a predator with a nut loose, but I prefer to remember him as this kindly old magic man. When I was in grade 4, 9 years old, we had a high school student come into our class and talk with us about a writing contest he'd won, and as a prize he had his book published. It was a novel about wolves in the afterlife. At the end of his presentation, he did a Q&A session, and I asked him what made him want to start writing. He said, "I don't know, I just woke up one morning and went, I want to write." I thought he was stuck up because of that answer, but I was interested in his book, so I read it from our local library. Fast forward to last summer, I was 18. I'm working in a kitchen and chatting with a coworker who I'd known for over a year and was pretty close with. The conversation turns towards writing, and he mentions he had a book published when he was in high school. I asked him what it was about, he told me the spirits of wolves. At that moment it clicked, and I realized he was the student who'd come into my grade 4 class so many years before. I told him about the question I'd asked him and how his response made me think he was stuck up. He didn't remember it, but we both thought it was pretty funny.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.